We love to hear it. It is the sound of Humboldt Baywatch, brought to you by Cocotat. They make all the gear that you need to get into the water, and guess what? They do it here locally, which we love. And boy, we are going to be talking about the water today, and we are going to be talking with Michelle Kuntz from the Trinidad Coastal Land Trust here on Humboldt Baywatch. Hey, Michelle.
Hey.
How's it going?
Going pretty good. I'm excited to be here and talk with you today.
Yeah, me too, especially considering what we're going to be talking about, because I myself am an avid whale watcher. I love looking out. I love any activity that's just sitting around at the beach, and that's about it. I love those activities with a high payoff.
Totally, yeah. So I am here today to talk with you about the migration of gray whales, which is a very timely show because we have a bunch of gray whales that are traveling northward right now, and anybody can go and look for them. And as you said, Mitch, it's just a great activity because you truly just get to sit on the beach or up on a bluff and look out at the ocean, and you have a pretty good chance of seeing some whale spouts, some gray whale spouts right now, if you are able to be patient. So what you're looking for really is mostly just their spouts. You know, they're way out, quite a few hundred yards off the coast, sometimes even more. and so often you're really only seeing their spouts. So you're looking for this plume of mist, this kind of white blotch on the horizon, and that is them breathing. So they're breathing out water, breathing in air, because they are mammals, as most folks know. But you will also see, if they are a little bit closer to shore, you have the chance of seeing their back. So this kind of like gray, dark, if the sun's in the right spot or if it's even out in the first place, you can see like a glimmer on their back. They're, you know, it's wet and they get a little glimmer. And so that's another good clue for looking for them off the coast. So, you know, you're not, these are gray whales. They don't really breach like you've probably seen videos of humpback whales doing. So they're not as dramatic of a show, but they're definitely out there. And I find it really enchanting to even just see the spouts and get a glimpse of their backs shimmering off the coast. And just even knowing that they're out there traveling up the coast is so special to me.
Yeah, I mean, even just seeing their spouts definitely is cool, because just knowing that they're out there, when you're looking out at the ocean, it's just interesting because it doesn't look like there's a lot going on, right? It just looks like a bunch of water. And then all of a sudden, boom, a big spout of air comes out and you go, holy cow, there is like a school bus size mammal living underneath there right now.
Totally. It's so amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that kind of leads me on to what I wanted to talk about next, is just their some basic ecology. So they're huge. They are not nearly as big as our blue whales. Those are the biggest whales in the ocean, and actually just the biggest animal on Earth, really. And the gray whales are quite a bit smaller than even humpback whales. But they are one of the most common ones to see around here. And the reason for that is because we have our Eastern Pacific stock. So they're migrating from Mexico up along the west coast of Mexico, California, Oregon, Washington, Canada, Alaska, and they go all the way up to the Bering Sea, up in the Arctic of Alaska, and, you know, kind of between Alaska and Russia. And that's where they spend their summers. And so as summer is approaching, the gray whales are making their northward passage past Trinidad, and they're coming all the way from Baja, Mexico, where they have given birth, or, you know, the females have. And so they have their little babies in the lagoons that are warm and protected from orcas or killer whales, which are their natural predators. And then that happens in the wintertime. So many folks go down to Baja to whale watch, and that's happening in January and February. And then now we're in March and soon to be April. And so they're traveling past the coast. And they tend to stick pretty close into shore on their northward passage because, remember, they have their babies with them. And so they're trying to protect their babies from orcas or their predators. And they're also just trying to kind of teach their young. You know, they're in the shallow, more protected waters. they're needing to feed more. They're just going a little bit slower and staying a bit closer to shore. And then they're passing through Oregon and Washington and all the way up to Alaska. And up in Alaska, it's a great place for these whales because, you know, they get almost 24 hours of sunlight a day up there in the summertime, which means that the waters are super productive. They're just bursting with life. And these gray whales are filter feeders, which means that they are filtering out little creatures, little planktonic animals from the sediment at the bottom of the ocean. And the summertime, there's just, you know, the waters are just chock full with plankton and little invertebrates. So they just spend basically all summer long feeding, getting up, you know, storing up tons of fat and getting their babies all big so that they can, again, make that southward passage past the West Coast in the fall time back down to Mexico for their next breeding season. So that's kind of why we're seeing them real close to shore this time of year is they've got their babies with them. So oftentimes you'll see, like, either single males, they kind of start earlier in the season, or you'll see pairs of mothers and calves. And so that's often kind of this time of year what we're seeing when you see the spouts off the coast.
So if you are seeing, because I sometimes wonder when they're close into shore like that, I think, oh, a whale's not going to be that close. That's maybe like a dolphin. So if you see more than one, because dolphins kind of pack up, you're saying they're not going to be in big packs together. They're kind of hanging like mom and baby, maybe two or three. So if you see just one, is that maybe going to be a whale?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so there's definitely individual males, especially, that are going to be traveling alone, or females that maybe didn't give birth this year. Sometimes, though, you definitely will see huge packs of them. Like last year, there was this kind of anomaly where there was dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of whales that kind of were staying in one place off of Patrick's Point Drive, and they were all grouped up pretty far offshore. And you could just see spout after spout after spout. So I don't really know what was going on there. They just maybe found a really good patch of food and were hanging out. But, yeah, you'll usually see them in smaller groups.
Wow. Okay. Well, man, can you imagine just the, like, tourists or people who were going by that day? Like, yeah. What a sight.
Totally. What a sight.
I love to hear that they are filter feeders. Does that mean that they have baleen plates?
Indeed, yes, it does. So we have kind of two basic groups of whales. We have whales with teeth, so actually killer whales. They are not sharks, as some people think they are. They are whales, but they have teeth. And then our baleen whales, a whole other group of whales, has these plates called baleen, like you said, and they are made of keratin, kind of like our fingernails. And there's just these plates that kind of stick out on their jawline. So kind of similar arrangement to teeth, but they're these long comb-like structures. And so the gray whales in particular, they'll swim on the bottom of the continental shelf right off the coast. And anywhere where there's sand or mud, just any kind of sediment, they're going to scoop that mud into their mouth. And then they use that baleen to filter out the water and the mud, and then they keep those plankton, those little invertebrates, inside of their baleen, which they then eat and digest. So pretty interesting behavior.
It is really interesting. And weirdly, I don't know what it is about, like, mitochondria being the powerhouse of the cell and baleen plates being like the only thing from junior high science that everyone remembers. Like, those facts for some reason just, like, really stick with us. But I always think it's so interesting that the biggest animals out there are feeding on the tiniest little bits.
Totally. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And something that I wanted to touch on today that kind of relates to this is, you know, like when we think about some of our megafauna, the ones that are really charismatic and the ones that we love so much, like the whales, when you think about their ecology and you think about how they're eating plankton and all of these tiny creatures, I can't help but think about the impacts, the threats to those animals, climate change being one of them and a pretty major one at that. And so something that we think about is how climate change affects ocean acidification, which is a process of altering the chemistry of the water, which then alters the way that many animals build up their exoskeletons. So calcium carbonate is the exoskeleton of many, many creatures in the ocean, from mollusks, shellfish, to plankton. So a lot of these planktons have little shells of calcium carbonate that are then being altered by this process of ocean acidification. And I just think it's really interesting to look at that chain effect where there's, you know, this tiny, the bottom of the food web, they just live in the mud at the bottom of the ocean, but they are greatly affected by changes in chemistry of the ocean, and then it goes on up pretty quickly to affect some of the biggest animals on this planet, and, you know, some that are just greatly valued for so many reasons, intrinsically, culturally, but also economically. There's all sorts of whale watching activities around the world, in Trinidad as well. So it's just interesting to think about those connections.
Right. I mean, especially you think about whales, and for me, I'm like, oh, they get hung up in fishing lines because that's one that we talk about. And that's definitely a thing. But you don't think about the little, I don't know, mud bugs being a major factor in their ecology and potentially in their decline as well.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I mean, we have fishing infrastructure entanglement, definitely a cause of threat to these animals, as well as the ocean just being really full of vessels, lots of boats moving around, big, fast-moving objects, and also the noise pollution that I think a lot of people don't think about is that whales, in particular, utilize sound, so the sound landscape through echolocation to kind of map out the ocean underneath them or around them, because it's a lot easier to listen to water than to see through water. So those are just a couple other things that I think about when I think about the whales in the ocean.
Well, and that reminds me of, oh my God, that story about the whale that was singing in the wrong register. And so none of the other whales could hear him. And I was like, way to just break my heart, internet. Like, wow, that's the saddest story I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's funny you bring that up. My friend was just telling me about that, and it is really interesting. And I think that those are more humpback whales and other types of whales that have those really, really detailed systems of communication through sound and song. But that one is a particularly sad one.
Right, I know. But we're focusing we're focusing on the happy aspect that a whole bunch of new babies were born. And they're coming up with a tan from Baja, and we get a chance to see them. So is there any particular time that would be a good time to go whale watching?
Yeah, so I feel like what we've been noticing is that the morning times generally are a little bit better for seeing them. So kind of like get up in the morning around 8, 9, 10 and go out to Trinidad. Scenic Drive in Trinidad is really a perfect place to go looking for them, as well as Patrick's Point Drive. Anywhere where you can kind of like get a good bird's eye view of the ocean is better because you get the contrast of the spout over the water. So usually in the morning, but really I feel like I see them all day long. If I'm patient enough and sit there with, you know, like a book in my hand or whatever, and I look out at the horizon, lately I've been seeing them pretty much every day. So if you're patient enough, you'll definitely see them.
Man, again, I love, one of my favorite things is just going and watching the water and sitting along that scenic drive. And so I love the idea that that there it's an activity.
Yeah.
that you get to see whales coming along. So cool. How long does this go on? You said that they're going to be making their way up. And I know that they won't be out there forever. Do we have days, weeks? How much longer generally is it taking them to get up there for the stragglers?
Okay. I would say that we're kind of in the biggest part of the migration right now, with the most whales passing through for the last couple of weeks and probably for a couple more weeks. Okay. And, you know, they'll probably start dwindling off, passing by Northern California, probably at the end of April, May, It's kind of hard to say. I think it really can vary, but you definitely have a good amount of time to go look for them.
Oh, good. Well, and it also means that just if you happen to be, you know, cruising by, take a little break, stop off, give it, yeah. You know, can't hurt to just stop for 20 minutes, whatever, do a little meditation and maybe see a whale spout. And you'll know it's a gray whale. And then maybe if you're lucky, you can see a little tiny spout next to it and know that it's a little calf.
And a fun fact about their spouts that I haven't mentioned that is just so sweet, and it is a way to tell the difference between gray whales and other whales, is that the gray whales have kind of like a short, bushy spout, but if you're facing it head on, which is kind of unlikely if you're sitting on the coast, but if you were lucky enough to be sitting in a kayak out on the water, and their spout, they're going right towards you, and they spout, their spout is shaped like a heart.
Aww. That's so, see, now here I was bringing up the sad, lonely whale. No, here's what we need to be talking about. There's little babies out there, and if you catch them, they have little baby heart spouts.
Yes.
Yes, that's the type of info we need.
Totally. And just to leave off with one more great fun fact is that they live symbiotically with a species of barnacle that is unique to them. So the gray whales, another distinction between other whales is that they have this really mottled skin coloring. So they tend to be gray, but they also have patches of light and dark. And if you were to really zoom in on their skin, they're absolutely covered in these big barnacles, usually more around their head and their tails. But I just love that there's all of these individual species or individuals of this barnacle species that live all over these whales and only on the gray whales. And I just think that's so cool.
Well, that's both gross and cool at the same time, especially to think that, like, you know, every animal species thing, whatever, has its own, like, universe. And it is interesting to think that there is a species of barnacle that their whole planet is just one whale.
Yeah, and it works out well for them. They just get to feed on the ocean currents around the whale, probably pick up some extra scraps from the sediment that the whales are feeding on.
Yeah, well, good for those barnacles. Again, gross, but good for them. They've really made the most of their little barnacle life. They get a chance to go all the way from Baja to up to Alaska. That's pretty cool. Those barnacles are traveling further than I am. Here I am calling a barnacle gross. They're probably going, you're boring. You sit in a chair all day. You know, I'm boring to that barnacle. So do we have, that wasn't quite the high note that we should have ended on, but barnacles are having a good time with the gray whales. Do we have a good whale song today by chance?
Yeah. So, you know, surprisingly, there are lots of songs called whale songs.
Yes.
And other about whales. So it was kind of hard to choose, but I had to choose a song that I actually genuinely really like called Whale Song, and it's by Mountain Man.
Whale Song by Mountain. I will say there are a lot of whale songs, more than when we did Nudibranes.
Yeah, that one was hard.
That was a tough one, Nudibranes, though I think about them often, and that is the joy of doing Humboldt Bay Watches. Now I think about all these little things, and I'm going to be thinking about the fact that barnacles take more vacations than I do, but it is just food for thought to process through our little baleen brains. So I'm going to play Whale Song from Mountain Man. That's a good choice. And hey, thanks so much for talking with us today. And I love that hopefully a few people are going to stop off and maybe see some spouts because we talked today. And I love thinking about bringing just a little bit of joy to people's lives.
Yeah, good. Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, have a good one. Thanks.
Bye.